ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Nagani here with you. It is a Tuesday. We are taping leading into, of course, a big, big week in our worlds collide with college football and the NFL for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday's NFL draft on ESPN Live from Vegas. Jaquan Brisker, star from Penn State in that defense, the safety who's expected to hear his name called somewhere in the late first round, early in the second round, will join us to talk about his journey and from a JUCO player and what he experienced and how that helped him when it came to Penn State and where he'd like to go and his vibe and how the position of safety has changed so much over the last 10 years and outstanding young man. And then we're going to get a guy that's going to evaluate Brisker, and that is Mel Kiper Jr. Once again with us here leading up to the draft, getting ready for his 39th NFL draft. Mel has so many good nuggets to pass on, specifically how he views ratings, how he had one player rated 84th, and that player went actually number one in the draft in the 90s, and the debate and discussion he had about rating that player and why it changed, and then why eventually Mel was right with his prediction, and also where he views Aiden Hutchinson and the conversation with Trayvon Walker at number one with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Enjoy the conversation with Mel. The busiest man, I think, each and every draft week is joining us now on the College Football Podcast. We always appreciate just any amount of time you can give us, and that is Mel Kiper Jr. getting ready for his 39th draft. With ESPN, he has invented, basically, he's made the draft, as we've talked about in previous years, on the build-up over the mocks and the conversations and the talent evaluations. This one's a little bit different for you, Mel. You got a little challenge here not being there. What do you anticipate? What have you done this week? Because you will not be in Vegas Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Everything's remote, Kev. That's what we've been doing since 2020. So every show I do is from that same studio. Every radio show I do, I can take you back there. It's back, right back there, about a 25-yard walk. And that studio, I'm going to have monitors galore. I'll be able to, I won't be sweating, okay? I guarantee I won't need sunscreen. And I won't have a hot box in front of me like we did when I was in Dallas that one year. So all in all, it's going to be a home game for me, which is going to be friendly confines, right? In the land of pleasant living down here in Kent Island. So it'll be fine. Like I said, everything I do with all those guys is remote anyway. So it's going to be another day at the park.
Great. And another day at the park is unique here specifically for this draft, because it doesn't feel like the drafts that we've kind of accustomed to over the last couple of years. Well, we know the quarterbacks. They are the big storylines. They're headlining everything. Defense, especially offensive linemen, they're going to be the headlines. And then wide receivers. And I'm just talking specifically about day one. How would you describe this draft as we're a couple of days away?
Unpredictable, even at the top. The quarterbacks are going to be, even though they're uninspiring is the word I get, Kev, on the quarterbacks, they're still going to be the talk of the first round because we talk about quarterbacks, right? That's what we do. I think in terms of the receivers, Jameson Williams is a storyline there, coming off the ACL, now back in the middle of the first round. I think the receivers certainly beyond him, are you going to have 5, 6, or 7 going in the first? Vegas, I think Caesars has a 5.5 for an over-under. You can bet on this stuff, Kev. How about that? 5.5 one receivers in the first round. I think that's a perfect number. I'd probably lay off that number and say, yes. But I got a couple other ones I liked a little better when I looked at them the other day, but we'll share that with you. But and in terms of the draft itself, though, I think corners – with Derek Stingley Jr. and Sauce Gardner at the top, and the third cornerback being Trent McDuffie, does any other corner jump in the first? Because you got to cover these receivers, and if we only have three elite corners, who's going to reach a little bit for Andrew Booth Jr. from Clemson or Kyler Gordon from Washington? So I think that'll be good as well. And then where does Kyle Hamilton, safety from Notre Dame, fall? Back in August, I had Kayvon Thibodeau 1, I had Kyle Hamilton 2, and Derek Stingley 3. Now all three of those defensive players that had high grades in August are going to drop back just a bit.
and you can get a ton of value. Let's just say you're like the Giants and the Jets sitting there with that second pick inside the top 10. You can get mm-hmm. value on the back end of that early part of the draft here. The defensive ends, Thibodeau was that guy, that type of freak that in high school, everybody's like, whenever he decides to come out, he'll be the number one pick. That has changed. And then Aiden Hutchinson projected for a 6-week stretch as the number one pick out of Michigan, going to the Jaguars. Then we've heard in the last couple of days, Trayvon Walker's name out of Georgia, potentially going number one. Ekwonu, potentially, depending on who's making the pick for the Jaguars. How do you handle those type of storylines heading into the Jaguars are on the clock, the first pick of the draft?
Let the chips fall where they may is what I always do, Kev. I think mock drafts are interesting to do, but they've overtaken the landscape. Okay, and it ends up happening with me, and I got them all right here. All these mocks are right here, and they're scribbled around, right? Because you remember where you mocked the guy, and then he's drafted, and all you remember is where you mocked them. So if you mm-hmm. ask me the day after the draft, what do you think about this player? I might be telling you about where I had him mocked, not where he really went, because in my mind is the whole mock thing. So I think it's great to do that. People love them. They're fun. If I get 6 right direct hits in the first round, I'm pretty happy. If I get 7 or 8, it's probably an all-time high. McShay will probably tell you he had 25 out of 32 direct, but he does revisionist history on everything, Kev, as we know. But I think when you look at the first round itself, where do the guys go and how do they match up against the ratings? That's all I care about at the end of the day, is where did I have them ranked? Where did they go? Who presented value? That's what we all do. Todd does it. We react to our ratings. We don't react to mock drafts. We shouldn't. Okay, mock drafts are gone. They're dead and buried on draft day. Okay, and once the draft starts, you got to get mock drafts out of your head. It's hard to do, Kev, because you all want to be perfect, right? But you got to forget about them. They got to leave your mind. And then you got to worry about what this kid can do, what he can't do, and figure out where you had him rated, not mocked, okay? Because that's the most important thing. And then react. Everything I've done over the 39 years has been based on my ratings. And if you got to stick to that. You can get trapped into the mocks, but you got to stick to your ratings. And everything you react to is based on right or wrong, Kev, right or wrong. Kevin Negandhi, you got to react to Kevin Negandhi's ratings, not mm-hmm. where you had a mock on what you heard. I want to know where Kevin thought this quarterback was rated. I want to see where Kevin thought this defensive back was rated. Okay, that's all I care about. And I got to always remember and just basically remind yourself that that's what the fans want as well.
Who do you have rated number one then?
Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson has been my number one player. Ikem Ekwonu, I've loved all along, as you know. I've loved Derek Stingley Jr. all along. And that's where you get into this, Kev. This is the tough part. If you know a kid's dropped a little bit, but do you stick to your rating? Because you don't want, I always tell you, I don't want my ratings board to be working in unison with the mock, okay, and where I think guys are going to go. So I always get trapped and say, well, I got this guy at 86, and he might go 25. That'll look bad. Should I move him up to maybe 55? Yeah, so in your mind, you have to play games like that, and at the end of the day, you shouldn't care. So you always got to slap yourself and say, wake up to reality. Don't uh-huh. worry about what people think, because I don't care. I never have. You know that. And don't worry about if a guy goes 60 picks later than you had him rated, who cares? Who cares about how they play once they're in the league? So this is a fun process, but it's tedious. It's tough. And you got to remember, it's entertainment. It's fun, but take it seriously and don't overthink it.
Do you remember an instance where that happened with you, where you had a certain rating and then you're like, you didn't do it, but you start to say, oh, whoa, do I need to change this? Because I have this guy graded 6. He's going to go 20. I immediately think of 4 years ago, Baker Mayfield, where he yes. wasn't rated or graded as high as many people did believe. But the Browns internally and John Dorsey and people within that organization suddenly decided he's our guy because of what we liked about him. Has that ever, do you have one specific instance for you?
Yeah, I do. It was just funny. It was way back when Jeff George came out, if you can remember.
Okay. Very funny.
This kind of ties into every year because we deal with, you know, our producers, right? Like Brian Ryder's producing the draft this year. But remember Freddie, a good friend of mine, he's remained a friend for years, one of my best friends in the business, Freddie Godelli.
Yes.
Freddie's producing the draft when Jeff George came out. And Freddie said, send me over your ratings board. I sent the ratings board. It was the top 40 we were doing then, right? Top 40 for the big top 40. Where's Jeff George? I said, well, he's like 84th. He's going number 84th. One. True story. I said, he said, well, no. He said, so the fans, he said, I'm going to have a top 40 now, number one. I said, well, put him 40th. I mean, he has to be on the board, put him 40th. And that's the way he did. That was a true story. I think we had four. So, again, that's, again, where you try to, you know, just rate the guys. And, so, again, that Rick Meyer, 33rd when he went number two. So, you know, he made the 40, but he was at 33. So, things like that. I had more guts back when I was younger, Ken. I was a little crazier. If you think I'm crazy now, I was nuts back in the day, okay? I didn't care about anything. I just, hey, whatever, I'm putting these rings, I don't care what anybody thinks. I don't care what the NFL thinks. I'm doing it. And I did it. And sometimes I was right, sometimes I was wrong.
That is a fascinating. And you know what? You were right there with the projections, right? When you look back,
Sproul finds a nut every once in a while, Kev.
So then where do you have Trayvon Walker in this conversation? Because, again, it has changed so much, and you have Hutchinson there. And then I want to get a little bit deeper into that conversation when it comes to Hutchinson and Walker, because people are thinking, well, Walker has a bigger window of upside. Then that starts to get in the conversation instead of just looking at what you have right now. How do you evaluate that?
Yeah, Walker's right around 10, and Hutchinson's at 1. So to me, you know, you're taking a guy, and I get why they're doing it, if they do it, which we won't find out till Thursday night. But you take Trayvon Walker, you're basing it on the 6'5", 272, 4'5", 140, 35 and a half vertical, and he's long arms, a double, triple my arm length, right? So he's got long, incredible. He looks like the perfect defensive lineman. But you say, was it steam, the two-gap steam that freed up everybody and they moved him around? But he showed more quickness inside to me. He looked twitchier inside to me. He didn't finish. You know, he had 9.5 career sacks. I can give you the numbers of Clowney and Bosa, both as Nick and Joey and Clowney and Miles Garrett. Kev, they triple, okay, the numbers. So this will be all-time low career numbers for a first-rounder, let alone a number one, number two, number three pick overall. So for Trayvon Walker, you're saying two things. I can get him in the right position to be great. I can coach him up to be great. I can get him to use his hands, which he doesn't do effectively right now. And I can make him, because he has incredibly awesome talent across the board, incredibly, I can make this guy who looks like the perfect defensive end, I can coach him up to be a 12 to 15 sack a year guy, or just a double-digit sack guy when he only had 9.5 career and 13 tackles for loss career at Georgia.
Fascinating. It really is. And then I... With all of that, when you talk about Georgia, we could see, I don't know, you would know this more, 5, 6, 7, who knows how many players in day one, day two of that Georgia defense off the board. How much do scouts, evaluators, teams look at the college programs and the coaching when it comes to putting up their own type of big board?
This is a great question, Kev, which you just said. I've been thinking about that today. And you nailed it with the question. Georgia players defensively are the toughest players in this draft to evaluate for me. I don't know how Todd feels. If he was here, he might tell you otherwise. For me, they're the toughest players to evaluate. And they're ascending. Trayvon Walker, maybe to number one. Jordan Davis, defensive tackle, maybe to top 10, top 15, moving up, right? All these guys, N'Kobe Dean's a little borderline, but Davis and Walker have moved up, okay, from the combine. So they're tough evaluations. I think Walker, for the reasons I gave, Jordan Davis, can he keep his weight around 340? And can he become a sack guy, not just a stay-at-home guy? And if he is a stay-at-home guy, he's going to need sack guys around him like A'shaun Robinson had this past year with the Rams, correct? So when you got all those guys coming, you can be a great run stopper. What they say, if you run the ball, you're not running against the Rams when A'shaun Robinson's in the game, right? That's what Jordan Davis can be, that immovable object, the defensive tackle, right? That mountain of a man that you cannot run on us. But you got to have pass rushers to help out. So if Jordan Davis goes to the right team, I get it, okay? But if he doesn't, he won't be disruptive enough. So to me, it's where these guys go. But they have N'Kobe Dean, great career, football IQ through the roof. But does he have the length to be a great tackler? Does he have all the measurables you need to basically come to the NFL and transition to the pro level and do exactly what he did in college against the best in the business? And then you look at Lewis Seen, the safety, nice player. He's going to go high, no question about that. The kid I think is the most underrated Georgia player is Channing Tindall. Nobody talks about it. You know, is he in the draft? Channing Tindall flies to the football, can play inside or outside. He's going to be a great special teamer early on, but we forget about how productive he was for Georgia. So, again, there's guys like him that kind of get lost in the shuffle, and a couple guys that I think are the most difficult players in this draft to evaluate.
I can't believe we've been talking literally 15 minutes and I haven't brought up a quarterback question. And so we got one or two more questions before. Let's get to the quarterbacks. Uh-huh. Over under, if I set it at 3.5 quarterbacks taken in the first round, do you go over or do you go under?
I would say right now under. And that's based on what because I hear so many people in the league saying, you guys, they always talk about you guys, me, you guys in the media, the media scouts. Okay, all you media scouts have all these quarterbacks, and I don't like you. I don't know where you're getting this. I don't know this guy. Yeah, he's a product of you guys. Okay, we're you guys. So I think three tops, Kev. I'll go with three tops. You said 3.5. I would go under
because Desmond Ridder?
Ridder or Corral? I don't know which one. I think maybe somebody trading in for that fifth-year option, you know, in the end of the first round. Maybe Detroit at 32. But I could see – and some people think Pickett could drop out of the first. I don't. And I know Todd was talking about it. I think Todd's correct on this. If you get Pittsburgh at 20, looking at both quarterbacks, and neither one is gone, and they take one, who's taking the other one?
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a trade up, who's taking the other one? He mentioned Tennessee. I've heard that for Desmond Ridder, you know, the Vrabel Fickell connection. You know about that? Vrabel and Fickell were defensive ends at Ohio State on the same team in Columbus. Now you have Luke Fickell coaching Desmond Ridder. Maybe Mike Vrabel and Fickell talk a little bit and say, hey, my quarterback is pretty good.
Yep.
I want to get him. So that's the connection there, Kev. But overall, if Pittsburgh takes one and the other one's left, who trades back in? And that would probably be Pickett or Ridder or Corral. So to get the four, Kev, based on what I just said, I would take the under 3.5.
Okay. This is a personal question because I feel like we're not talking about this guy enough, and I want to get your evaluation. I understand it's going to be a first round dominated by wide receivers.
Right.
I feel like that injury to Jameson Williams has put it on the back burner on people talking about him. How do you evaluate Jameson Williams, especially with the idea that he can help a team maybe in November and change around something? Where would you put him when it comes to the wide receivers in this draft?
On talent, Kev, he's number one. Okay. On ability, he's number one. On where he will be slotted, probably the third or fourth receiver taken behind Garrett Wilson, Drake London, and maybe even Chris Olave. I have him as the third because you don't know when you're going to get him.
Yep.
And are you going to get him in September? Are you going to get him in November, somewhere in between? Talent-wise, he's the best receiver in this draft. If he didn't have the injury, he'd be a top 10 pick guaranteed. You said talking about him, I think he's right now, to me, the intrigue of the first round. Because if he gets down, I'm looking here, if he gets down to, say, 15 Philly.
He's gone. Far?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So does somebody like New Orleans, who picks at 16, right? Does somebody like New England at 21 or Green Bay at 22 and 28 or Kansas City at 29 and 30? Does somebody like that jump up knowing that you just said it? 15, he's gone, right?
He's gone.
Well, they get ahead of it. Who sent it in 14? Baltimore? You know, Eric DaCosta said, hey, I'm Monty Hall. Let's make a deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. You want to come up? Fine, right? I have 16 fourth round picks the Ravens have this year.
Yep.
So again, add to the list, Kev. They know they've hit on a lot of those picks over the years. Baltimore could be a team to trade back. So I think it's going to be fun to see for Jameson who trades up, or does somebody allow him to fall to them? What happens with the quarterbacks? And then where does Thibodeau, Stingley, and Hamilton, those three guys that were 1, 2, 3 on the board back in August, where do they go? I think we just talked about it. Could this be one of the more entertaining drafts in a long time just because of the lack of predictability? I think it could.
And then especially the evaluation, we've seen that from 25 to 50, you don't have a big difference of talent. It is not like I have to have first round talent. You could still get value in the 30s on day two that you could have got on the bottom part of the 20s there in the draft. Before I let you go, we're going to have Jaquan Brisker of Penn State on with us. Fantastic safety. He's going to join us on the podcast in a few minutes. Where would you have him slated? Because Kyle Hamilton is the cream of the crop at safety. Where does Brisker fall?
Jaquan's a good football, but James Franklin loved this kid. He was always kind of the guy that was the defensive coordinator on the field, okay, for Penn State. Love everything. I think the safety group at the top, he's battling Jalen Petrie from Baylor, Lewis Seen from Georgia. I had him when we did the mocks, I had him early second. I think when Todd and I did that rotate mock, I believe we had him early second. So I think early to mid second at the latest, Kev, for him. And just one player we have not talked about quickly, Kev, is David Ojabo from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He had the Achilles, or he'd have been a top 15 pick. Jameson Williams, we're talking about a lot. We don't talk about this great pass rusher about 11 sacks opposite Aiden Hutchinson, limited football background. I'm talking about character through the roof on David Ojabo. What a great kid he is. But when will he be back? Do you have to redshirt him this year? Where does he go? It's going to be, does he even go in the first round? Will be very intriguing.
Phenomenal point. I'm glad you brought that up, because if you can get him in day two, that is a steal to where you were and how you were feeling back in January watching this young man with Aiden Hutchinson. Mel, you're the best. I wish you only the best on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then I hope you can celebrate with a fantastic slice of pumpkin pie by your beautiful wife.
That's waiting, Kevin. The studio's back there. The pumpkin pie's in the refrigerator.
Love it. I love it, Mel. Thank you, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Always the best, Kev.
It's our pleasure to welcome in Jaquan Brisker, second team All-American, first team Big Ten safety, who is it's a wild week if you're a draft prospect, because you hear a lot of things. Whether you're going to be in the first round, second round, you hear promises, you anticipate, but at the same time, we will find out Thursday and Friday night for this young man who joins us out of Penn State. So, great to have you with us. Your journey, Jaquan, has so many peaks and valleys, right? And I think that's part of why you're here, why we're talking about you potentially going on day one. There's projections, of course, late in the first round, in the second round. How are you feeling right now when you talk to people? How much intel have you gathered leading into Thursday and Friday of the NFL draft?
Really, just talking with people, knowing I'm the first or second, talking with people just about my game and really, to me, it really never mattered. Just as long as I, get an opportunity, I'm always thankful and blessed and humbled to be here. So that's why I always say, whether, as first, to the last pick or, understand, I'm just always thankful to be here in this position.
And when you talk about where you were, I mean, you were in a junior college, a standout at Lackawanna College, and then you get the opportunity where you get scholarship offers throughout the country, including programs like Alabama. You decide to stay in the state at Penn State. Why Penn State, and what has the last 3 years done for you when it comes to understanding what is needed on a daily basis to be an outstanding safety?
Yes, Penn State, just to reach in there around the safety, defensive back position. I wanted to, to go there and, and change that. And, I feel like I did. And, Penn State, just because, I know that they develop, their players. I know that in the weight room that, you're going to get stronger, you're going to get faster. I know on the field, defensive-wise, you're going to, run everything that the NFL ran, Coach Pratt, and Coach Franklin, did a great job of, helping prepares and, also coaches and, developers.
One of the there's a gazillion mock drafts out there, especially this year, where you can't say anybody's really a lock, even at the number one pick. We've heard that name rotate around with Aiden Hutchinson, of course, Trayvon Walker and Aquanu on the offensive side. You've been projected in multiple spots. I found one interesting with the Cowboys and reuniting with Micah Parsons, a guy that you didn't get the chance to play with him in 2020. He decided to opt out. But what would it be like if you were to join a team like the Cowboys and link up with Micah once again?
If that was the case, that would be crazy, unbelievable, But, for them, it really helped the defense a lot, having, two great players like that, whew, man, the fans would love that, for sure. That's winning football right there. So, great defensive players. That would be a crazy experience, but, players who love to eat on the field, yeah, it would be crazy.
Yeah, you mentioned, fans would love that. I can tell you Dallas fans, Cowboy fans would love that. It wouldn't go well in the state of Pennsylvania when you got Steeler fans and Eagles fans, right? But this journey for you, let's go back to Lackawanna College. When you were going to the JUCO route, what were those days like there when you became a standout on the JUCO level, but you knew you were a D1 star or could be potentially? What was that experience day in and day out as you got, a high school star, and then you've got to transition to the JUCO level?
really transferring to JUCO, you know, just every day, you know, just really just trying to grind, you know, really work hard. You know, everybody there, you know, wants to be, you know, D1. So everybody wants to be in those shoes. So, you know, really rising up to being a star, you know, I would just always stay humble. But always, you know, make sure, you know, I always, you know, push myself. You know, teammates, you know, used to come in my room or we used to go in each other's room and just work out, you know, just let's go. Like, you know, just, you know, really just work out, you know, just really just work hard. You know, behind the scenes, you know, people don't see that. But we used to always, you know, hit, you know, little private fields. You know, always used to go in each other's room and work out or in the hallway and, you know, just work out, do push-ups or, you know, do curls, you know, with the band. But we always found a way. And then, you know, me just becoming a star, you know, I just kept, you know, working hard. And, you know, I try to bring, you know, people along with me and, you know, ended up working out.
Since 2019, you're the only safety, by the way, you have the highest average coverage grade by PFF when it comes to safeties. You didn't give up a touchdown in 713 coverage snaps. And then since, you know, that time in 2019, when you became a guy that was on the field at Penn State, only one safety has a better coverage grade, and that is Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame, who's projected to go somewhere in the first round. We've seen top 10, we've seen top 20. When you are mentioned among some of the top coverage safeties, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
No, really, you know, just going out on the field and just covering, you know, showing that, you know, I have coverability, but really just showing that I'm very balanced. You know, it's all about consistency, you know, not allowing a touchdown. And then also, you know, having great coverage, you know, great, you know, through the years, it's all about consistency. So, you know, that always means, you know, great things. So, you know, what comes to my mind is just, you know, strapping up and make sure no one is catching the ball.
Obviously, you have to have the versatility that you can drop back and you can play outside the box, but also come up and play in the box. Do you have a favorite part? Do you like the coverage? Do you like, you know, covering the wide receivers out there in that no man's land of center field? Or do you like coming up in the box and hitting?
Really, I say everything. You know, I love my versatility. And I love being in the box, you know, being physical, you know, covering and playing zone and, you know, being a force player. And I love, you know, being in the secondary, you know, showing my range and, you know, showing that I can attack the ball, you know, and play back there, you know, with them slots and, you know, read quarterbacks. So, you know, I always say, you know, I always say both. And especially my versatility, you know, playing the nickel, you know, linebacker, safety, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever is great for the team, you know, I always do so.
Yeah, the chance to declare for the draft after the 2020 season, decide to come back. You're a 2021 captain. There are a handful of highlights from last season where you're the leader on the team. I mean, of course, the Wisconsin pick on the fourth down with Graham Mertz inside the red zone. When you think about that and you have the option and people just watch a game like that, how much film do you put into being in the right place at the right time to understand what the offense is doing?
Really a lot of film. You know, I was watching tape. You know, we played them. We never played them. So, you know, going to that game, that was the first game. So, you know, the tape was from last year. So just watching that tape from last year, you know, they had played Minnesota. And they had played, you know, one more team. I just remember, you know, the quarterback, you know, always going to 84, you know, and it was like certain formations, and especially third down, I was like his favorite target. So you go into that game, you know, I knew that. And then, you know, when I sat on the sidelines for a little bit, I also was paying attention. So I figured that out. So at the end of the game, you know, all that film, you know, that I was watching, you know, it paid off.
After the game, you put out a very personal tweet saying that was from my brother, Tale. I love you so much. Can you give us the backstory about losing your brother when you were in high school and what he meant to you?
Yes. Just, you know, in high school, you know, in 2015, you know, I had lost my brother. And, you know, he meant a lot to me because, you know, he was somebody I looked up to. You know, both my brothers, they were, you know, both, you know, people I looked up to. And, you know, he was in my corner, especially, you know, before he left from school. You know, he was in my corner, you know, always talking to me, always make sure I was in the right direction. And we had a great conversation, you know, before he passed too. So I was the last person to see him in my family. So really just, you know, 2015 was a tough time because I had really messed up my ankle too. So he was there during those times. And then, you know, he was there before, you know, before he left. So really, you know, he meant a lot to me. And I used him as, you know, motivation, you know, especially the conversations we had. You know, I made sure, you know, I fulfilled his promises.
Will you be with your family on Thursday and Friday night? Like, what are the plans on Thursday? What are the plans on Friday? You know, obviously, it sounds like it's a close-knit group. Obviously, yeah. Thinking about your brother on Thursday and Friday. What are your plans heading into the week?
Plans on Thursday and Friday to have it in Pittsburgh with family, friends, you know, teammates. Just have, you know, those guys come to Pittsburgh and, you know, have everybody come there and, you know, just have a great time, really, you know, rather – you know, I go day one, day two, or, you know, never go. You know, we're just going to have a great time, and, you know, I'm going to be a fan. So
you got an outfit picked out? Some of these guys have outfits, of course, in Vegas, or outfits just hanging out with the fam. You got an outfit?
Yes, I do. My first day, you know, I'm going to dress up, wear a suit. Then the second day, I'm probably going to, you know, do the same thing. But if not, I'll probably, you know, have on some, you know, something nice.
Do you have any plans to kind of distract yourself? Because, you know, the draft isn't like a 1 hour thing. This, especially day one. Day one can be very long. And if you're waiting on the bottom part of the first round, you're just sitting there checking your phone, refreshing, talk. Do you have anything to distract yourself when you're with your family for Thursday and then potentially Friday?
Yes, you know, really just walk around, you know, talk to people that's there, you know, really eat, you know, there's going to be great food there, yeah. You know, but, you know, just catch up with everyone, you know, keep my mind off it, but also be a fan, you know, no expectations that, you know, that I won't get picked, you know, that's what's in my mind, you know, just had an expectation, you know, just be a fan, you know, go in there, you know, just watch it like I usually watch it. And then, you know, my phone rang, but, you know, regardless, you know, I'm going to be blessed and, you know, whoever gets me, going to be a steal.
It's actually a great approach then. So you don't go in with any, I mean, you have expectations, but you don't go in with any disappointment coming out wherever you go. The game has changed so much, Jaquan, when it comes to, especially the last 5 to 10 years, where we're seeing the focus on the passing game and things are opening up. You see, obviously, in the offseason, the wide receivers getting their money. You're seeing cornerbacks get their money. Where do you think the safeties fall in this conversation? Because the defensive ends are getting their money. The quarterbacks getting their money. How do you view this position when it comes to evolving with the passing offenses and covering wide receivers?
I think we're as important as a quarterback. We make calls back there just like the quarterback. You know, we had to transfer to the corners, to linebackers, and the linebacker got transferred to the D-line. So, you know, we got to get the calls in, and then we're back there quarterbacking just like the quarterback. So if we're not, you know, right there, obviously, you know, we're below the quarterback. You know, everybody loves the quarterback. So if it's not quarterback, then I think it should go to safety, then cornerbacks. Or that's what I think, because we're back there, you know, calling plays, you know, making great adjustments, you know, communication. And, you know, there's nothing behind us at all. So, mm-hmm. You know, we make a mistake, everybody sees it. So just like the quarterback, he make a mistake, everybody sees that. So I think it's the same.
Do you model your game after any specific player, any safety, any cornerback, anybody that you want, any linebacker? Is there anybody you watch in the NFL or even in college that you're like, I want to do that?
Yeah, I watch a lot of Sean Taylor and Minka Fitzpatrick film. When Minka was at Alabama, you know, I watched him just because of his versatility. You know, he played nickel, he played corner, he played both safeties at Alabama. So, I look at, you know, I was coming out, you know, high school and college, you know, I was looking at Minka, then I was watching a lot of Sean Taylor film, just his physicality, but also his range. He's very physical, but people don't know he's real, very rangy, you know, picking off Brett Favre a couple times, and he dropped maybe two or three, you know, in some of those games. So, you know, Sean Taylor a lot, so those guys.
Well, if you could take anything from Sean Taylor, you are going to be no doubt somebody to keep an eye on in the NFL game, considering the impact he had. And Minka is fantastic as well. He has added so much stability in that secondary when it comes to the Steelers and their defensive attack. Your season at Penn State, it wasn't just the Wisconsin pick. You know, the knockdown against Bo Nix in the Auburn game, which was phenomenal. The whiteout and that entire environment on ABC on Saturday night, 9 tackles and a pick against Iowa. When you look back at this season, what will be your fondest memory playing for that Penn State defense?
Really, probably, you know, the whiteout, but, you know, just suiting up every game with this defense, you know, just taking the field, you know, whether, you know, in any circumstance, you know, whether, you know, the offense made, you know, a mistake, you know, and we had to come out there, you know, it was always just great taking the field, you know, with the Penn State defense, you know, always enjoying every opportunity, you know, that I got. And, you know, I love, you know, playing with those guys. So, you know, just, you know, stepping out there and, you know, just, you know, having big shoulders, you know, that was always great. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, every moment I had with them, you know, I really enjoyed it.
Jaquan, we appreciate it, man. And honestly, we wish you the best, whether it's Thursday night or Friday. I got to tell you, if you go late in the Thursday in that first round or early in the second round, whoever's getting you is going to grab a special kid, man. So we appreciate it, and we want to wish you the best of luck. Enjoy the week. You will never get this week ever again, right? And I can see that big smile on your face. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Big thanks to Jaquan. Wish him only the best. I think whoever's going to grab him is going to get an outstanding defensive player, one of those type of leaders within a couple of years on your defense on Sundays. And of course, Mel Kiper, who just, we had so much fun. And by the way, Mel's fitting us in between conversations that he's having with teams, radio interviews, TV interviews, and he just, as soon as you get him started, boom, he's on a roll, and suddenly 20 minutes pass. And that's what I love about Mel. So he's going to have fun on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It is my favorite 3 days when it comes to talking about the NFL and college football and an TV event. It is my favorite thing, and it'll be great on ESPN. Todd McShay, we hope to have next week here on the College Football Podcast to kind of go over what we missed and what he thought about the 2022 draft. And then he'll release his 2023 mock with us. Cannot wait to talk about that and give us, college football fans, something to look forward to when it comes to certain players he is predicting. I imagine quarterbacks will be at the top on a very, very talent-rich quarterback first round in 2023. Fantastic podcast today. Taylor Schwenken and Sarah Abbott always doing a great job. Our producers on the other side making sure we have our guests lined up and we're ready to go. Until then, enjoy the rest of the week, and we will talk to you next week.